From lengthening mascara to smoky eyes, complete your fall look with Thrive Cosmetics. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/cozy for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive, CAUSEMETICS.com/cozy.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who with it now?
Get the home run.
Damn right, Astros putting a whooping on the Dodgers last night, 5-0, thanks to, as you heard from Apple TV, we had Heidi Watney, who was the sideline reporter of the Killer Bees, if you want to check out that podcast on our podcast page. But Astros 5-0, thanks to a John Singleton homer, Alex Bregman went yard, and of course, Framber Valdez shoved 6 1/3, no runs allowed, 10 strikeouts. Very vintage, other than maybe... I guess the vintage Framber would include going 7 innings, a very vintage Framber outing, which I will certainly not complain about that he only went 6 1/3. But welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. I am Brian McDonald. You can find me on X at Sack by BMAX. Of course, Sean Mapes with me as always. You can find him on X at Sean A. Mapes and Clutch City Cam on Twitter. Clutch Cam Smith back with us as well, and as well as John Bellmer behind the glass. You can find him on Twitter at Third Coast Johnny. If you want to join in the conversation, please give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. I'm sure a lot of Astros fans have some hate maybe they want to pass along for the Dodgers, because look, I don't think. I don't think the rivalry really exists for the players on the field, because there's so few players left between these two teams from 2017. For the Dodgers, I think it's just Clayton Kershaw, who's not even pitching in the series. And then for the Astros, among active players, because Verlander and McCullers aren't on the field, it's just Bregman and Altuve. So I don't know if the rivalry really exists for the players, because it's been so long, so many players have turned over, and frankly, they play so infrequently. But I think they had to feel good for Astros fans, especially online, because the Dodgers hate continues in the mean streets of Twitter.
Yeah, that's mainly where the rivalry is. Like you said, the actual guys on the field for the Dodgers, I can't really get worked up.
I mean, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's just Kershaw. I think that's all that's left.
I'm looking at, they have Kike Hernandez still.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
And that's... I think that's the only
former
guy.
Astro.
Was Will Smith on the...
No, he wasn't up by then.
Yeah, I think it was still Grandal. But yeah, so there really isn't that. I mean, they have a 2017 Astro and Teoscar Hernandez in the middle of their
exactly,
lineup.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that the beef is only really still alive on the X streets.
Yeah.
And so that's really the best part of the win, other than you get to extend your lead against the Rangers.
Yeah. The Rangers lose, and you need, obviously this is not to state the most obvious thing of all time. You need wins, Sean. I don't know if you're aware of that, but with I know it's you like that breaking news, Cam.
Yeah.
But with the Mariners getting to face the White Sox, and I think they won like 10-0 last night, so you're assumed they're going to sweep them. Unless they just completely fall apart.
You have to mark it down.
You have to mark it as a possibility that the Mariners could just completely Mariner and lose the series to the White Sox. But assuming they go ahead and finish business and sweep the Mariners, I mean, you at least got to win this series against the Dodgers so that the Mariners can't pass you in the standings, still one game up right now. But let's talk about some of these performances. Alex Bregman and John Singleton, like you heard in the intro there, both with home runs. Bregman continues. I mean, we talked a ton about his slow start, which he's always been a slow starter, but this year was even more exaggerated than in years past. But he's really been on a tear since about mid-May. And I think he's getting to the point where, I mean, the Astros aren't going to offer him anything ridiculous. We know they're not a team that goes, you know, obviously not even up to $200 million. They're not going to go 6 years. I don't think Bregman could even get that. But I think he's starting to move himself into the territory where they're at least going to try to be competitive with their offer to him.
Really?
I do. I do. Like, I mean, I guess it depends on what they offer him. Like, if he gets offered, or if he's willing to accept, like, a Matt Chapman type deal, which was, I think, was 3 years, $54 million, I think they would be in on that. So, $17 million a year. I think they could even, I could see them even going to maybe, like, 4 years up to, I don't know, $80 to $90 million. I could even see that. But it's not going to be more than 4 years with them.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see it crossing the $100 million threshold, which he hit the first time.
Yeah.
But I don't, the reason I say competitive is I don't think that offer that's over $100 million that's over 6 years is going to be there for him anyway. So even with the resurgence in the second half. So I think we've all kind of dismissed the idea that, hey, Alex Bregman's gone. Doesn't matter. Maybe you bring in Paredes because he can move over to third base after the season.
Yep.
But I'm starting to see, like, maybe there might be a path there for Bregman to return.
Yeah, it is a situation where if he keeps hitting like the way he's been hitting, like you said, since June, there's probably going to be bigger offers there. That I guess that's where I was thinking. I was thinking that the market might be a little bit hotter.
How big do you think the market would get? I can't see it going past like 5 years, $100 million.
I definitely could.
I could see 125, 5 years.
Okay, yeah, I'd probably be out at that point.
Yeah, and so that's of course if he keeps playing the way he's been playing. There is an opportunity for him to drive sure. the market up.
Yeah, we're not even August. Yeah, we're not even August yet.
So that's really what it is. But like you said, you mentioned Matt Chapman. Would have thought he got more too. So
yeah, obviously, the common denominator there is the Scott Boras clients. We've seen this with a lot of the Scott Boras clients, you know, Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell, Matt Chapman, obviously Alex Bregman. So I think there might be an opportunity there. But let's go over to Framber Valdez, who. I think we spent some, you know, part of the last few months talking about how up and down he is. And I had an epiphany the other day that we're really just talking about June. Like when you look at, I believe it was June, it was either June or May. But when you look at his season, like his month by month ERAs are really good, except for just the 1 month. So, and he continued with another great outing against a good offense with the Dodgers. Framber now has won his fourth straight decision. I believe the Astros have won six straight of his starts. And he's allowed 3 runs or fewer in 6 of his last 7 starts. I don't want to say Framber is back, but I'm starting to get Framber's back vibes.
I mean, I'm okay if you were to say that, if Framber is back.
Cam will allow it.
Thank you, Cam. Yeah, Thank you for giving me permission there.
Absolutely. I'm so
You're
glad.
You're going to walk out on the ledge? Like, I feel a little uneasy stepping out on the ledge of really backing the guy that can get rattled by a ground ball to him. I feel uneasy about that, but I'm starting to get to the point with, you know, like I point out, you know, they won 6 straight of his starts, 4 straight decision with a win, 3 runs or fewer in 6 of his last 7 starts, dominates a good offensive lineup last night with the Dodgers. I'm starting to lean towards Framber's back.
Well, and the thing too was, is like, besides those 7 or those 6 wins in a row, the previous 2 out of 3 starts he had, I think he got losses, but they were still quality starts. So like you're talking about 9 or 10 games in a row where he's been the Framber that we expected. So that's why I'm okay with us saying I think he's back. But I feel like this team is like a vibe team. It's like once when everybody's rolling,
Framber's definitely vibes.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's a more vibe dependent player in Major League Baseball than Framber Valdez.
I was gonna say I think
Framber Valdez is nothing but vibes.
He's probably the player. I would have to really think about it.
We need a vibes ranking.
The player most where it all just depends on like the mental side of his game. Where I don't think there's any other, like every other player, you kind of take it for granted. That's like, yeah, he'll be ready and mentally prepared to take the to take the ball. And Framber, it's like we don't spend as much time talking about anyone's brain as much as we talk about Framber's.
No, especially not in Houston. So I mean. I will see what happens going forward if he continues it, but I think he could be playing. I mean, especially when you tack on what's happening with Verlander. Let's get into that. But when you tack on what's happening to Verlander, if the Astros make the playoffs, I don't think there's any doubt right now Framber would be your ace going into your game one starter going into the postseason. So Speaking of Verlander, I mean, obviously the Astros have a lot of high-profile guys in the training room right now. Speaking of vibes, not a lot of good vibes coming out of those training rooms.
No.
Luis Garcia apparently threw a 35-pitch bullpen on Friday. Cool. But
sick.
I mean, sick. Congrats, dog. But he's still got to be a month away from coming back, at least. And I mean, he's coming off of Tommy John, so who knows what to even expect when he does come back. Justin Verlander, who I love that they put in quotes his injury is neck discomfort, which is total Astros. They found a way to get discomfort in. He apparently is going to be scheduled to throw a bullpen today, Joe Espada said. But again, we're talking about bullpen sessions. I mean, we remember from what became like an extended spring training from Justin Verlander in March into April before he eventually made his debut this season. Like every week is like, well, I think if I feel good, maybe next time out, I'm going to face live batter. So Verlander hasn't even progressed to that point. So we're still probably a month away from him. And then maybe the most troubling, because we thought it was just like a 3 or 4 day, shin bruise, is Kyle Tucker. He's still not playing because of the right shin contusion. At least they're now calling it a contusion. But he apparently continued to do outfield drills on Friday. And according to Joe Espada, he, quote, is improving, but not at the pace we want him to.
No.
So which, bad vibes all the way around.
I agree with that. That is not the pace
I hate that quote.
But it's very accurate.
I hate that quote, though. What does that mean? Like, he's improving, but just not really, basically. That's how I kind of see it.
He's improving, but not very quickly.
I think
a slow phone charger. Like, okay, went up from 41 to 43%, but it's like, it really should be like a 48 or 49 right now. This phone charger sucks.
But I feel like Espada does this a lot.
Spot on
like,
analogy.
there's a lot of like,
myself on the
oh,
back.
They're Come doing on. Really well, but not really. With like,
well, I mean,
injuries
isn't
this
that
year.
Just the Astros way, though? I mean, this is the same team that years ago didn't know a hand of Fromber was hurt.
Yordan.
There was just the same team that told us, Christian Javier slept on his pillow wrong. He's got neck discomfort, and that turned into Tommy John. So there was the whole thing with Verlander. When he had Tommy John, where Chandler Rome reported he's going to need Tommy John, the team's like, oh, no, he doesn't need it. And he had Tommy John. So I think this is... Isn't this just par for the course of the Astros? I mean, would anybody be shocked if
the misleading is just so?
Would it be? I mean, would anybody be shocked if Kyle Tucker's injury is not a shin contusion but some sort of hairline fracture at this point?
No, then just come out and say that.
But they're not. It's the Astros. I'm agreeing with your frustration, but I mean, we can be frustrated all we want. They don't care.
Yeah, there's a little bit of like weird bedside manner with the Astros too, where they like they want to. They want to like not. They don't want the patient to freak out, and the patient being Astros fans, so they'll always like soft pedal things. But the thing is,
it makes your anxiety go up.
Yes, when you say it's not a bad injury, and then he's out for 2.5 months.
I didn't read this. Well, this wasn't from Joe Spada. This was on Dana Brown when he was from the flagship. I know you guys talked about it on Gallant and George, where he said, well, we hope we're optimistic he can back by September. We hope it's earlier, but maybe September. Like, maybe September. I mean, I had a timeline built out of all the different reports I pulled in from RotoWire of all the different things the Astros had said about Kyle Tucker since he first got hurt. Like, I think it was June 3rd.
Yeah.
And it was always like, well, we think he's going to be back by Friday. We think he's going to be back by Friday. Then he goes on the AL. And then my favorite part, at one point, they had a report that he had run on a treadmill. 2 days later, the Astros report was he might progress to running soon. It's like, wait, he just ran. You just told us he was running on a treadmill. Now you're telling us he might progress to running. The reports from out of Astros camp is just bad
you can't,
vibes.
It's a tough situation because it's all you have with all these injuries is like, well, let's see when they come back. But then you also have to remember these people are not credible at all.
No.
And I'm not saying
it's a bunch of Jason Lock and Forrest. I'm not going to take anything they say seriously.
I'm not saying the reporters are not credible. I'm saying the Joe Espada and Dana Brown are not credible with what
right.
they say to the media.
The sources that the reporters are getting are not reliable.
They're not credible.
All right. So we got to let's carry over the Astros conversation into the break, mainly getting to some of the moves that their division mates have made, specifically with the Mariners getting Randy Arozarena and also training for a bullpen arm. Does that increase the Astros' desperation near the Tuesday's trade deadline? What must they do? We'll discuss that all when we get back on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Myself, Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, Cam Smith with you here today. If you have anything you want to say about what we're talking about with the Astros, their win last night against the Dodgers, or what the Mariners have done, what the Astros must do with the trade deadline, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. And I'm just going to apologize right now for my voice. I'm battling some injury or some allergies right now, and some injuries, both actually. But
how long are you going to be out for?
Yeah,
I've got
some back discomfort right now.
It
could be anywhere from like 3 days to 3 months. And actually, Joe's here, so this is news for him as well. I'm out anywhere between 3 days and 3 months. We'll see how it goes. Dana Brown will let you know. Back. Yeah, I'm progressing.
You're not to running yet.
No, because I'm 40. I hurt myself like the most 40-year-old way ever. I hurt my back while trying to pull a generator into the back of a pickup truck.
I was going to say trying to start the lawnmower.
That would have been more 40-year-old. But trying to get a generator into the back of a truck is a pretty 40-year-old way to...
By yourself?
No, I had help. But see, when I got the generator, because I was borrowing it from a buddy, he and I are strong enough to lift it out of the truck. But I had my dad with me. He was almost 70. And so he couldn't lift it up with me, but he could help. Like, we had a ramp, and so he was going to help push it from, you know, the bottom, mm-hmm. where I pulled it from inside the truck. And as soon as I started to pull back on it, the back was like, no, you're 40. Stop doing that. So anyway, before we get back into what we have to say about the Astros right now, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. We have La Salsa wanting to talk about the Astros. La Salsa, what do you got for us?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Hey, sorry, Extreme Mexican. Are you going to be on the 10-day IL or the 15-day IL?
We're not committing to the IL right now. I think I'm going to be back by Monday. Yeah, I'm going to be back by Monday. But, you know, it's a game-by-game basis. I've got some back discomfort. We'll update you when the updates are warranted.
Okay, good, because I want you to stump the bees. So, anyways, my favorite part of the game yesterday, obviously it was a great game. But, dude, John Singleton pimped the heck out of that home run. That was awesome. What do you guys think?
He might have. I saw someone. It might have been Michael Schwab. I don't remember. Or it might have been Apollo Media. But someone titled their tweet with the Singleton home run with the best bat flip in the game. And it's – I don't know if it's Jose Bautista level yet. Jose Bautista was the king of the bat flip. We'll never forget that walk-off he hit against the Rangers where he paused and just, like, chunked the bat across the field. Yeah. John Singleton, I think he's very consistent with the quality of his bat flips.
Well, his is very minimal, but it's very like passive aggressive. Like,
well, he just like flips it off to the side.
It's very quick too,
and just like a
get away from me.
It's like a quick toss.
It's like one motion.
Yeah, I was just about to say it's like almost part of his swing. Almost. It's because
it's his bat flip the King Griffey of swings.
Why isn't he bat flipping on every swing? He'd hit nothing but home runs.
I think there's a causation correlation.
I don't know. I think I'm onto something.
All right.
If every swing he had ended with the bat flip, he did nothing but home runs.
I like where Cam's head at. It is like the Ken Griffey Jr. of swings when it comes to bat flips.
But we used to have a player, RIP, wasn't it Luis Valbuena, who would literally flip the bat every swing? Yeah. And then didn't Carlos Gomez do that for a period of time?
Gomez.
Gomez.
The 2015 Astros.
Part of the one of the worst.
Or 2016 Astros.
Gomez is part of the worst trade in Astros history. Yes. So he's going to go down as someone I don't look upon fondly. All right, moving quickly on to what the Seattle Mariners have done. I can't talk that trade brings up. I mean, it sent away Josh Hader, which now you had to overpay. It brought Mike Fiers to the organization. The rest is history. But the Seattle Mariners went out and I think surprised everybody because I saw Vegas odds just like 12 hours before this trade happened. About, you know, who was the favorite to get Randy Arozarena from the Tampa Bay Rays. And the Mariners were on the list, but they're only like fifth or sixth on the list. They were pretty far down. And so they get him for, like, I think it was prospects like 12 and 24. Yeah. It wasn't a whole lot. And then they follow that up with the acquisition of relief pitcher Yimi Garcia, another former Astro. So they've added to their team. I'm curious to see where you guys are at. I talked about this a bit yesterday on the Killer Bees where I was at, and I'll let you guys go first here. But Seattle gets Randy Arozarena. Big deal, little deal, no deal?
Little deal. I'd say little deal. I think they're more than a Randy Arozarena away from their offense being playoff worthy, to be honest, because they legitimately have either – they're either 30th or 29th.
They were 28th. They were 28th in runs scored before the trade, behind only the Marlins and the White Sox
yeah.
behind them.
Yeah, I know they're playing the White Sox, and it's like two of the worst offenses in baseball. One of them is in a division race, the other one is the White Sox. And so the acquisition of Randy Arozarena, his numbers aren't good for the season, but he's been better as of late. He's actually been really good as of late, which tells you how bad he was to start the season.
He's kind of had an Alex Bregman season.
Yes.
Well, yes. And even more severe, because, I mean, Alex Bregman, his batting average is up over 250 now, where Arozarena is still like 211.
Yeah. He's not a high average guy.
But like you said, since like the start of June, he's actually been really good. But his overall numbers, when you look at it, because his OPS is pretty low too, you look at like, what's he going to do? He's been terrible this year.
Yeah, but they probably need another bat or two. That's why I'm not going big deal, because I think they're still as of right now, I'm still going to give the Mariners an incomplete if you know the deadline comes and goes and this is all they stand pat after this, then that's where I think it's actually a little deal.
Yeah, I think it's a little deal too, because like I'm looking at the Mariners like lineup right now, and their on base percentage for their players is just atrocious. So it's just like, who's even going to drive in?
Yeah, that's the problem. They have Julio Rodriguez who's had his own struggles this year, and Randy Arozarena, who's obviously been great in the past, including Astros fans remember the 2020 postseason.
Yeah,
where
he was awesome.
I think he had like 7 home runs in that postseason. He was amazing. Leading them to a World Series loss against the Dodgers. But, yeah, I'm with you, Sean. Like, even if what he's been from June through now is the real Arozarena, it doesn't matter. When you're 28th in runs scored, adding one bat who's not – I mean, he's even the player he is now is good. It's not – I mean, it's not Barry Bonds in his prime.
No.
It's not –
he's like
it's
an
not,
at, since he's turned it around, he's playing at like an all-star level.
Right. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, and I wouldn't even say a lock all-star. It's more kind of like the bottom end of the all-star. So, I mean, even if he hits at this level, that offense is starting from such a low point, being in 28th in runs scored, that even adding him to Julio Rodriguez, I mean, okay, they move what? From 28th in runs scored to 21st. Great. Your offense still sucks.
Yeah. What they really need, and if we're doing like Mariners radio, we would just be constantly talking about like what they need is Julio Rodriguez to actually to play better. That's the actual biggest move they could make at the deadline.
Oh,
is just,
no, not biggest. The move at the deadline.
It's just
getting
him
our own
play
guys
better.
Back. Yeah.
Just him, him play better. It's like where we were with the Astros to start the season with again, Alex Bregman, where it was like they don't need a new third baseman. They just need Alex Bregman to play better.
Yeah.
Same thing with Abreu, and we saw he didn't. He decided not to play better.
Yeah. Oh, I love the report that came out clearly from his agents. Like, well, he's going to take the rest of the year off.
I saw that.
With an eye to being ready.
With an eye to be ready for 2025.
He's going to go back down to Florida and get his swings in.
Yeah, he's going to go eat, pray, love, and get his groove back. That's what's going to happen for Jose Abreu. As he's nearing 40. That's what 40-year-olds do. I don't know if you guys are aware.
Is he having a midlife crisis?
He could be. I definitely think it's possible. My 40th birthday was a little bit rough there. So
really?
We talk about that off air.
Oh,
I don't want to bore the people. I don't want to bore the people.
Wow.
There's a moment. I mean, you guys will get there, Cam, much sooner than Sean. But
I don't know much sooner.
Well, Cam, what you're like, what, 34-ish, I guess? Oh. Am I dead on? Okay, I'm dead on. So, so he's going to get there 6 years before you, Sean.
I thought you were younger.
Oh, wow.
I get that.
I guess that's a compliment from Sean. You appear youthful, even though you're an old man.
Thank you. I hope it has nothing to do with my height.
No,
it's your disposition.
Oh,
yeah. The vibes.
You have a youthful disposition.
Yeah. So another move made in the American League. We might have to carry some of this conversation over, but another move made in the American League. The Orioles get Zach Eflin also from the Rays, which had to be a pitcher, I think, on the Astros' radar. But I think what's maybe, I don't know if they planned it this way, but I think this could end up being a positive thing for the Astros. With some of these acquisitions being made, they're letting other teams around Major League Baseball kind of set the market for what these fringe all-stars, just less than all-star type players are getting in trade value. So hopefully that keeps the Astros from, A, overpaying for the guys they look to acquire, and B, maybe if the market price is lower, which, I mean, I was shocked by what Randy Arozarena went for, then maybe they can actually get multiple pieces instead of just one. I'm curious what you guys think of some of these reports. There's two reports coming out recently, one from John Morosi from MLB Network, saying this was on his Twitter account. Jack Flaherty has been the subject of trade dialogue between the Tigers and the Astros. He's, of course, a right-handed starting pitcher for the Tigers, formerly of the Cardinals. And then Chandler Rome said, sources, the Astros have expressed interest in Cubs starter Jameson Taillon. Jameson Taillon, I believe from the Woodlands. I know from the Houston area, but a long-time Major League veteran starting pitcher. He's had his ups and downs, but has been pretty solid. I mean, your overall thoughts on some of these names being thrown out, and if you prefer someone else, let us know. But what are your thoughts on what the Astros might look to do with starting pitcher? Because I think we'd all agree that's the number one need.
Yeah.
But what do you think they look to do here before Tuesday's deadline?
Well, the thing with Eflin getting traded and the Astros, I guess, being linked to not just – it's not Isaac, it's Isak, right?
Right.
Isak Paredes and more recently, Yandy Diaz, the first baseman for the Rays. Paredes, the third baseman, who can play a little bit of first. And they're also linked to Eflin. So it looked like there's a really good chance, or at least a chance, that there could be one move that kills two birds with one stone dealing with the Rays. Obviously, now Eflin headed to the Orioles. I doubt that they trade for both Diaz and Paredes. They trade for two bats.
Yeah, you couldn't play both.
It also just wouldn't be a good allocation of what you need, of the holes you're trying to fill. So they will have to look elsewhere for pitching. I do like the White Sox starter,
Eric Fetty. Yeah, Fetty's kind of been the name I've keyed in on, because he's a guy that, because of his age, because he had to go over to Korea to kind of rebuild his career last season, comes back to the White Sox this year, or comes to the White Sox this year, and has had a really good season, ERA under 3. But because he's 31, because he doesn't have this long track record of being super successful, I think his price tag is low. And if you get him, not only are you getting a player who I think is going to be on a discount, who's played well this year, but he's on the books for one more season, right?
Like low deal, too.
I believe it's just one more season. But
but a low number.
Yeah, exactly. 7.5. He's making $7.5 million next year, which is also a reason why I like Tyler Anderson, who did make the All-Star team for the Angels this year, because he's also under contract. If you get him, when I don't know if the Angels will be willing to deal in the division, but if they did, Tyler Anderson...
They don't want to play him in the playoffs.
Yeah, that actually, good point. But Tyler Anderson is on the books next year for one more season at $13 million. So obviously 7.5, way greater savings than 13, but still, even at $13 million, we're talking about, I mean, that's less than Lance McCullers is making to sit on the bench. So either one, you would have team control for next year. They've been great this year. And what they're on the books for next year is very, very reasonable.
I'd say Fetty and Flaherty, the killer Fs. 1-2.
We got way too many of those. So we doing the killer G thing. I'm getting killer Fs.
I like Anderson. And then that's when those are the three pitchers that I want to come away with one of them, and then one of the Rays.
Fetty, infielders. Anderson, or Flaherty?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Where are you at, Cam?
I mean, I'm with y'all on Anderson and Fetty. I'm probably more Jameson than I am over Jack Flaherty. And then I would much rather have Paredes than Diaz, just because Paredes can play first and third.
Looking ahead, if Bregman leaves?
If Bregman leaves, you can plug in him. Obviously, you can plug him at third base. Plus, his numbers are just overall better.
Yeah, well, his are way too, more power. So. Like, I mean,
yeah, I was going to say, Diaz is not weird because he looks like a power hitter, but he does not elevate the
ball. He won a batting title last year, but I believe he only hit 17, 18 home runs last season, whereas Paredes hit 31 a year ago and is on pace for 28 or 29 this year. Yeah, he's a much better power hitter. Not to cut you off, but not only is he a power hitter, but I heard this stat on MLB Network. All of his career home runs have been pull home runs. He's a right-handed hitter coming to the Crawford box.
He would demolish.
Yeah, it's a perfect fit.
I think I read something, too, where they were saying that if he had been playing with the Astros this year, he would have like 11 more home runs because of Minute
I believe
Maid.
It. He's a Deadpool hitter.
Barry Bonds.
And the other thing, too, is he doesn't strike out a lot. Like, I think he only has like 62 strikeouts to like 48 walks this year. So, like, he's a power guy, but like he's not up there just swinging.
And that is a very Astros hitter, is low strikeout, decent amount of walks, and
big time power,
and a bat that especially that plays at
Minute Maid. Plays big time at Minute Maid. Now, I wouldn't be. I'm with you that I would prefer, like, if all things, everything else is equal, I prefer Paredes for all the things you mentioned, like being able to play third at Bregman Lee's, bigger power, fits the ballpark really well. But again, I mean, Yandy Diaz won a batting title last year. You have the need at first. And because he's, I believe, 32, whereas Paredes is mid-20s. Yeah, he's mid-20s, and he has like 3 years left of team control. Paredes might be – we'll see, because Randy Rosarena just went for peanuts. But Paredes might be a guy that costs is so much so that would limit your ability to then get a starting pitcher as well. I think – you could get a better quality starting pitcher if you're willing to take Yandy than if you go all in for Paredes. And that's kind of where I'd be fine with Yandy, because I'd prefer to get my choice of pitchers or get Yandy and then still have enough left to go get my choice of pitchers.
I understand that thinking, yeah.
All right, so let's go ahead and go to break here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. If you want to join in and give us your thoughts on what the Astros must do with the deadline, or thoughts on last night's win over the Dodgers, give us a call on the HRMP listener line or text us 713-780-3776. Also, if you have Texans thoughts, because that's what we're getting to next, I've seen this put out there, guys, and it's a bit of a hot stance, a hot take, if you will, but we're going to kick it around when we get back. Is this season Super Bowl or bust for your Houston Texans? That when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We're back.
Oh, hey, we're back. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Have you been back for a while?
Not too.
It's Saturday. It's more casual. I mean,
just vibing, a little outcast.
Just vibing. Yeah. Good vibes over here on like the Astros training room that we talked about in the first segment. But again, if you have any thoughts on what we talked about with the Texans, or about to talk about with the Texans, the Houston Astros, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So I saw this, I believe it's a tweet from Jonathan Alexander of the Houston Chronicle, leaking to an article, of course, asking the question, like it seeming to indicate that the fans' expectation for the Houston Texans this season, Super Bowl or bust? Your immediate reaction when you hear that?
I think it's definitely possible that they can go to the Super Bowl, maybe even win it. I mean, if you can go to the Super Bowl, you probably can't win it. But I don't think the expectation is to win a Super Bowl. I think this is the expectation is AFC title game or bust. I think that's a more appropriate.
It's not as sexy of a headline.
No, it's lose to the Chiefs in the AFC title game or bust isn't going to drive a lot of clicks, I fear. But I think that's a more reasonable expectation. Year two with everybody essentially on this team, all the primary pieces, it's either year two or year one with these guys. I don't think I'm quite ready to stamp them with Super Bowl or bust. There's probably only like, I don't know, four teams in football any given year that are Super Bowl or bust.
Certainly the Niners and the Chiefs could say that.
Yeah, Niners, Chiefs, Ravens, maybe Lions.
Ravens, Lions, I think could say that. Because, the Lions had a big lead at halftime on the Niners.
The Bills in the past were Super Bowl or bust. Now,
I don't think they could say that now.
Yeah, so.
I think you're right. I think it's four teams this year that could say that.
I think every year there's only so many teams that truly have that expectation on them. And I don't think the Texans are there quite yet. Maybe next year. We're talking Super Bowl or bust, and I'm not saying that they can't win a Super Bowl. I'm just saying that that's not the expectation right now.
I mean, yeah, our expectation, no. I mean, obviously, you ask the players, they're going to be like, yeah, Super Bowl. Course. But no, I mean, they overachieved last year. They have a much harder schedule this year. So yeah, it's no way near Super Bowl or bust for me. If they could win, if they could just get to the AFC Championship game,
what would be a successful season to you then, Cam? Like if we're doing this show on February whatever, the one of the deadest sports months of the year, and we're reviewing the Texans season. What sort of season would they have to accomplish for you to say that was a great season? I'm excited for what they did. They hit their expectation, and I have no regrets or no disappointment.
Getting to the AFC Championship game.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say win the division, or at least win 10 games, 10 or 11 games.
I think they got to win the division.
So. I feel like they do, but if they are a wild card and they make the AFC title.
Right, if they still make, we're not going to, yeah, right, you're right. If they still get to the AFC title game, we're not going to bitch about if it was from a wild card spot.
Because they lost the tiebreaker to the Colts. Yeah,
right, like, yeah.
But
I do agree. I think to answer my own question, I do think, because Super Bowl or bust to me implies that it's been like where the Niners are, where they've been knocking on the door every year. Or the Chiefs, where trying to three-peat. The Texans, as Cam pointed out, definitely overachieved last year, and they made huge leaps and bounds. I think where we as Texans fans want to see is them to get where they've never been before, which thankfully for them isn't very far because they've never been to an AFC Championship game.
But to
see them go from 3 wins to 10 wins to Super Bowl is a bit much.
Yeah, I just think that. I mean, how many teams in NFL history have a second-year quarterback, a second-year head coach, a second-year
Cincinnati Bengals?
No, but the expectation is Super Bowl or bust.
Okay,
going
that's
into
true.
The season.
Yeah, it wasn't that for the Bengals going into the season. Yeah, they got to the Super Bowl.
We're talking
Bowl,
about expectations beforehand. They were no one says, "Hey, your quarterback's 23 years old, it's Super Bowl or bust." I mean,
now's the time.
Even if you want to do the deadline is while he's on a
rookie deal.
You still have 2 more years after this one where that's true. So I don't even 100% believe that's a deadline for teams to truly compete. So I like you said, I think the Chiefs, the Niners are two no doubt Super Bowl or bust teams, and I would probably throw in the Lions and maybe the Ravens, maybe the Bengals actually.
I'll throw Philly in there.
Okay, yeah, I think Philly would
especially
be Super Bowl or bust.
Acquisition of Saquon Barkley.
Well, and also
he's a little salty that he's not at Texans camp right now.
Oh no, no saltiness at all.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Sirianni also has to prove that it was him.
Yeah,
and not the coordinators that got out of town and then everything fell off.
Yeah, the Eagles are in a tough spot where I'm not even sure if it's Super Bowl or bust. It's more like win some playoff games and keep your job. You know, like
it's survival. It's pay my mortgage this month.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Stay employed.
Stay employed. So I think we're all in agreement there. Let's transition to the Texans training room. We talked about the Astros training room earlier with the bad vibes coming out of there. Not bad vibes all the way around in the Texans training room because they don't have a lot of people there that are super concerning. But one I am concerned about is Joe Mixon. I get it. It's what, today's July 27th. The Texans don't play till the first Sunday in September. So they have over a month to go before this. But I think all of us as fantasy football players know that other than season-ending injury, the thing we want to see the least pop up on our timeline for as a news update for one of our players is dealing with a hamstring injury. Those things linger. We've seen it with Christian McCaffrey. Cam, you've seen it with Keenan Allen as a Chargers fan. Him missed like 8 weeks in the middle of a season because of a hamstring. I'm not pressing the panic button now. I'm not even raising a tiny little red flag, but I'm kind of just putting a pin in it. Like, let's keep an eye on that because they bring in Cam Akers. I don't think Cam Akers is someone that they're going to depend on this season, but they brought in a name which seems to me to indicate they expect Mixon's going to be out a little while. And I mean, he's not a veteran that needs to play in preseason games, but man, hamstring injuries are just scary to me.
Yeah, he doesn't need to play in preseason games. Would like to see him in camp.
Yeah, he's learning a new system. Let's at least get him some reps.
Yeah.
I'm going to chalk it up to the heat.
The heat, just too hot.
Coming from Cincinnati in the cold.
But he played in Oklahoma in college.
Yeah, that's 10 years ago, man.
Yeah, it's 10 years ago. He softened up while he was in Ohio.
You said it, not me. You said it.
You know what?
Man.
I'll say it. If Ohio wants to come at me, 713-780-3776.
But I think where you're at is an understandable position, where it's not the end of the world that he's dealing with a hamstring injury again, 5 weeks away from the start of the season.
Right. It's just something it's, like...
You'd prefer he isn't, though. You would prefer that he's getting the Laremy Tunsil veteran days.
Which is
as
what
opposed
I thought
to,
it started off... Like, when the initial reports came out that he wasn't practicing, it wasn't reported as what we've later found out to be the hamstring issue, which was very Astros of them. Almost expected him to say, like, leg discomfort at some point. But then when it eventually came out... Because I thought initially, it's like, okay, it's a Veterans Day off. He's a 28-year-old running back.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, bringing in the hamstring, because... Look, I mean, again, I'm not pressing the alarms. I'm thinking he's going to be fine because he's got 5-6 weeks before the regular season. But he's a 28-year-old running back. And we've seen more than any other position, I think, in sports that when it goes quickly sometimes for these guys. It can go from fine to over the hill with a snap of a finger. And maybe this is nothing, or maybe this is the beginning of what we're going to eventually look back on and say, okay, his body's in decline.
Yeah, and as a fellow 28-year-old, I can sympathize.
How's your hamstring right now, Sean?
Never been. Been better.
Been better.
Good. I'd say good. I could practice right now.
All right.
I could be out there.
Oh, that's good to know. All right, let's carry this conversation over to the other side of the break. Get into some more Texans conversation. We got Lamont on the line. Lamont, don't go anywhere. We will get to you when we get back. If you want to join Lamont and ask us a question, give us a call at 713-780-3776. In addition to Lamont's call when we get back on the other side of the break, I want to play some audio from Colin Cowherd talking about the job Nick Caserio's done and ask the question, with Nick Caserio in control, are the Texans now entering an Astros-long golden era of Texans football? All right, that one, the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into the bullpen. Myself, Brian McDonald, found on Twitter at SatByBMAX. Sean Mapes, found on Twitter at Sean A. Mapes. And Cam Smith on Twitter as well at Clutch City Cam. And fellas, we were talking about the Texans and some of the goings on at training camp. If they're Super Bowl or bust, what's going on with Joe's hamstring? And right now, we have Lamont on the HRMP listener line. If you want to join in and also ask a question, give us a call at 713-780-3776. But Lamont's joining us to talk about what's going on at Texans training camp. Lamont, how are you doing?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Lamont. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. It was just an observation, and it doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things, man. But I was like, this training camp right here, the weather is treating the Texans fairly good. I'm assuming that most of you guys are from Houston in the studio right now, and you know how this place can get in July and August. And I was like, wow, man, it's been kind of pleasant. In other words, can you think of it of how the rookies that came and felt this desert last year was probably telling them, man, it's going to be real hot in Houston. And they feeling all this good weather. I know it's raining, and I know it's nasty, and there's mosquitoes out there. But we all know how this weather could get. And it was just something I just picked up on, man, that the weather, treated them somewhat decent this training camp than last year or years before. And that's all I had, fellas. Like I said,
What's up, Lamont?
No, like I said, it was just a light observation that I just picked up on.
I appreciate the call, Lamont. Yeah.
So, a very good observation.
A very good observation, though. Hot take, does this make the Texans a little soft going into the season? They're not going through the rigors of a normal Houston July. Going through the heat and the humidity.
According to Stephon Diggs, this must be what hell feels like.
Yeah, did you hear
this? Coming from playing in Minnesota and Buffalo. Stephon, if you're listening, I know you are, call us on the HRP list line 713-780-3776. You ain't seen nothing yet, bro.
It definitely, because it's something that our very own Paul Gallant, who's been going to training camp this week.
He's a hardo. Yeah,
yes. He's there every day. And every day he's like, I don't want to say it, but the weather's been really nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice when there's cloud cover every day.
There's clouds. There's a little bit. It was actually raining. Was it Friday when he went?
Yeah, because I remember
they're
when
off
I
saw him
when, he, when, I, when we crossed paths in the studio, he was complaining that his shoes and socks were all wet from being at practice. So
That's Paul.
That's Paul.
But yeah, it's a very good observation, Lamont. It has been good weather. Also, as three lifelong Houstonians, August probably going to hit triple digits.
August, I would
probably going to hit triple digits.
If we want to do a ranking of the worst months here, I think August is the GOAT.
Yeah, August 1.
September is actually, I would say, even worse. Actually, the three, July, August, September, I would say the best weather is actually July. Like September or August, at least the first part of September.
Maybe against expectations.
I don't know, man. September could be brutal. I've gotten sunburns in December at Longhorn games.
That's
a you problem. That's a you problem.
No, it's because it's 80.
That's a you problem, Cracker.
No, it was 80. Cracker, too? What are you talking about? Yeah, but it was 85 in December, Sean. I was trying to watch Texas beat the hell out of Colorado in the Big 12 title game.
It's about the sun.
I was like wondering.
It was 2005.
It can still be chilly, and if the sun is out in Houston, you're going to get burned.
Yeah, like, but it wasn't that day. It was, like I said, it was 85 in December. It was not a chilly day because that's Houston for you. But, yeah, no, if the new guys like the Neil Hunter, you know, obviously playing in Minnesota, Stephon Diggs, Minnesota, then Buffalo. We got a lot of Northerners coming down. Yeah. I mean, hell, even Danico Autry and Azeez Al-Shaarir coming from Tennessee. I mean, it snows there. Guys, buckle in. You've had some nice weather so far, but once it gets to August and this rain goes away, it's going to get hot real quick.
And normally wouldn't really be an issue for the Texans. I don't know if you know this. NRG is missing a couple roof panels up top.
Yeah.
They're going to be playing in the element, or at least like 20% of the elements.
Because I don't know if you know this, Sean and Cam, but you just can't go to Home Depot and get roof panels.
No. You know what?
As Cal felt it necessary to tell us.
I'm going
to
act like, of course I knew that. news to me, Cal. Thanks.
What area is the retractable roof panel in? Is that, is that H4 or is that on 7?
It needs to be like 75 yards long.
Yeah, how big of a panel are you looking? Yeah, I'm looking for about a 75-yarder, I think.
Maybe 80?
Maybe off-white, transparent, if you've got it. I don't want black. You know, it traps the heat. Let's go with white. I don't know if Home Depot carries that.
No. But more of an eggshell, actually.
Yeah. All right, moving on. That'll do it for a weather talk today on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. But continuing the Texans conversation now, we're going to go to some audio here, guys. Colin Cowherd on his show was talking about the job that Nick Caserio has done with rebuilding the Houston Texans roster and made some points kind of pointing the finger at Bill Belichick. He's like, you had this guy there and yet your draft sucks. So let's hear right now from Colin Cowherd on his thoughts on the job Nick Caserio has done rebuilding the Texans roster.
Because that franchise was a joke in the league. And then Nick Caserio, who was the director of personnel in New England, took the job three and a half years ago and has crushed the draft and crushed free agency. In three drafts, Houston now is a top five roster from a bottom three roster. Joke to playoff team in Houston. They just added a star edge, a star running back, and a star wide receiver in free agency. He has made almost no mistakes, Nick Caserio. He may have missed on an offensive lineman in three drafts. That's it. Yet New England's last six drafts, of which Caserio was in the building for a few of those, several of those, probably last seven drafts, have all been putrid for New England. So either Nick Caserio suddenly got brilliant when he got on a plane and flew to Houston, or three or four or five or six of those drafts, because he was in New England for years, and the drafts kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse when Caserio was there. So either he got brilliant once he got in an airplane and flew to Houston, or Bill Belichick trumped all of his advice, would not listen, and took over the drafts.
I think we know the answer to Colin's question there. He sets it up with, like, well, either this guy became a genius in the 3-hour flight from from Boston to Houston, or Bill Belichick decided to draft N'Keal Harry on his own, and all these other bums that have sent the Patriots roster to the point it's at now. So it is interesting, as he goes on, the clip is quite a bit longer. He goes on to point out kind of the mindset you see from some of these older, hard-nosed, tough guy, you know, defensive head coaches that want to have total roster control and then run the team to the ground because they can't focus on everything. So certainly seemed to be the case, though, happening there at the end in New England. Because Nick Caserio came here, and as Colin also points out, you look at his tenure here, and it's really just the one miss, Kenyon Green. I mean, obviously, everyone would rather have the safety that the Ravens got, Hamilton, out of Notre Dame. That was a big miss. Now, Kenyon Green, we'll see. The book's not completely closed on him. I think it's mostly closed. We're kind of propping it open with one finger.
It's close.
It's probably closed. I'm trying to be a little optimistic.
According
but you're right.
to my not sources, he's actually looked pretty well this camp. Like, he's slimmed down. Okay, he's been able to.
Okay, hold on. Who have they says, man? Who's D'Amico come out and says, like, man, this guy looks like ass? I mean, he's not saying that about anybody.
Well, no. But I'm
it's
saying,
in fact, we built a segment about it. Next segment called Training Camp Hype for this exact reason.
Well,
because everyone's in the best shape of their life.
Well, I'm not.
And everyone's injured ahead of schedule. That's just kind of the timing.
I mean, I guess that's what they're gonna say. But I'm saying, I feel like collectively this year, there's a lot more positive talk about him than there was.
I did see that he trained with I can't say his name, Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah.
During the offseason. So maybe that'll matter. We'll see. I mean, I hope so. Kenyon Green out of Atascocita near where I live went to Texas A&M. You want to see him do well. But, yeah, obviously that's the big miss right now for Nick Caserio was Kenyon Green instead of obviously drafting the safety Hamilton that the Ravens took.
Yeah, even Stingley over Sauce is like
– It's
just missed games. It's missed games is the only –
because year two was a wash. Year one, it looked bad, obviously. But year two, it's been a wash. I mean, you look even before he had good draft picks because year one, they didn't have a draft pick till the third round.
Yeah.
In that draft, they got N'Keal Collins, who's obviously huge hit. They got Jalen Petrie, huge shit.
One other guy.
Davis Mills?
Davis Mills.
I mean, I will say for a third round quarterback, I mean, I'm not going to say it's a hit. Davis. I'm not going to say it's a hit because he looks like a giraffe, as Cam's pointing out.
Yes.
But he was.
He wasn't a disaster.
As a third round pick, getting depth quarterback, I don't think that's a miss. You can say it's not a hit, but it's also not a miss.
Oh, I guess Tyrod started that season, right?
He started it at least the first couple games.
Yeah.
I don't know how far into the season he got.
But at least
week one and week two he started.
I was going to say we see a lot of rookies that are first round picks come in and look disastrous when they're in as
Zach
rookies.
Zach Wilson, yeah.
And Davis Mills wasn't a disaster.
Right,
that's all I'll say. Not Mills Mafia right now. This isn't Mills Mafia.
He also
hour.
Didn't have much around him either.
Yeah,
so.
But he and. He hasn't really been great since then. There hasn't been a lot of like flashes of great.
I think we would agree, not a hit, but also not a miss.
Yeah,
he's kind of squarely in the middle. So you hit with Petrie in a third round pick. You hit with N'Keal Collins on a third round pick. At least for one season, you hit with Damian Pierce on a fourth round pick. You hit on Christian Harris. You hit on Derek Stingley. Obviously, you swing big, not only for C.J. Stroud, but the trade up for Will Anderson. That's the hit. You add guys like Danielle Hunter, Danico Autry, and Azeez Al-Shaair. The trade for Diggs. I mean, Caserio's hit record has been really damn impressive, and it has me, as we tease going to the break, asking the question, because this is kind of where the Astros were at with the GM that you trusted in Jeff Luhnow until obviously what happened.
I still trust him.
There's some wiggle room there, but do you think the Texans are now entering, and obviously this question becomes easier to ask when you trust the head coach and the quarterback, but are the Texans now entering like an Astros-long golden era of Texans football?
Oh, I think it's too soon to start that conversation.
How dare you?
How dare you? Astros there. Let's put some respect on the Houston Astros.
Okay, so year one of that run.
2015.
They should have beat the Royals, but obviously they melted down in the seventh inning after the governor tweeted out, congratulations to the Astros.
Was it Greg Abbott.
It was Greg Abbott.
I was there for that game. I witnessed that ground ball.
Yeah.
I was working there at the time.
Four-run lead going to the seventh, and they couldn't get it done. But they should have beat the Royals. Next year they don't make the playoffs in 2016. So
and then they make the ALCS every year until
right. So obviously year. The Texans haven't got to that part of the Golden Run. But if you look at just obviously I don't hope they don't repeat the 2016. But 2015 was kind of what
they're on pace.
2015 is
they've started the race.
Yeah, 2015 for the Astros, 2023 for the Texans are pretty similar as far as like they overcame. Like very low expectations, got further than you thought they would, came up short. Now let's see how they follow
again,
up on it.
Again. All right. There are still seven straight ALCSs that they need to do.
So you're saying I'm jumping the gun?
I get it. It's like when a guy hits a home run on opening day and they're on pace for 162.
I mean, what you're saying is a mathematical fact, Sean.
And what you're saying is a mathematical fact that making the playoffs, winning a series. That is the same, or look, they didn't win a series. They won a play-in game.
Yeah, they won a play-in game, yeah.
But
it's the Yankees, though.
Cool. So, never mind. But they are on – 2015 and 2023 have some similarities.
Yes. Come on. Come over to my side. Come on.
I need a little bit more. Yeah. I need a little bit more before you call them the Houston Astros.
I know you guys are right, but I'm going to stand on business here. when you have a GM that's making hit after hit with Nick Castero, you got the coach, you got the quarterback, golden era, baby.
I'm not. How about this? It can be the golden era of Texans football. I'm feeling
all right.
I'm confident that this we will look back whenever, you know, 15 years from now, whenever CJ Stroud's ready to hang him up. Actually, it'll probably be like 20 years from now. But I'm willing to grant you that the next 10 years could be the golden era of Houston Texans football. I'm not ready to slap them with an Astros dynasty.
Because this was the same thing that was said a couple years ago with massage parlor spokesperson all right, who was on the team. So
quiet down, Cam. Like, there's no reason to bring Deshaun Watson.
I'm just saying it was the same hype. Okay. But they did it for a couple years.
So you're saying CJ Stroud's going to start looking up Instagram?
No, I'm not comparing. I'm not comparing them.
Taking up residency in the Houstonian.
I'm just saying. Texans were trash. Deshaun came. They had a really good year, overexceeded expectations, and people were like, "Oh, it's the golden year of the Texans." Hater. And then, bloop. Yeah. So I'm just
I distinctly remember like 2018 or 19 being like, "Deshaun Watson's already the best quarterback in Texans history." I know you can't say it, but he's already the best.
Up next is CJ Stroud, already the best. No, I'm kidding. But I'm just look, guys.
One or two more years.
Look, I mean when you guys are ready to jump on the bandwagon, look, I'm already on it. I might just, you know, push you back off. So there's not going to be room for you guys anymore.
In 2029, when they've made
fine, I'll hitch a ride with the Chargers.
AFC title games.
You can hitch a ride with the Chargers with that weird-ass coach of yours talking about coming out of the womb for training camp.
He's a genius. Let him say what All right,
we're going to break. We're way over. Cam, hater-ass Cam. I just turned off his mic. All right. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. When we get back, we're trying out a new segment. It's time for the Hype Train. On ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.